I have no idea where this will lead us, but I have a definite feeling it will be a place both wonderful and strange.
I'll see you again in 25 years. Meanwhile.
Listening to the sound the wind makes through the vines, I'm Jasmine.
And storming through a whorehouse, I'm Melz.
Welcome to Damn Fine TV's Twin Peaks Rewatch.
This week we're covering Season 2, Episode 11, sometimes known as Masked Ball, or as we're calling it, James's Wild Ride.
Listeners, where we're going isn't really a place, but a feeling. So let's rock.
This episode first aired on December 15th, 1990. It was written by Barry Pullman and directed by Dwayne Dunham.
Hello, Damn Fine listeners. It's Jasmine here with just a quick message before we dive into this week's episode. We have very exciting news. Our 100th episode of Damn Fine TV is just around the corner. Yes, you heard me correctly. Episode 100th. Just around the corner. And to celebrate, we are asking for your questions. We are going to record just your basic bitch Q&A episode, but we've never done anything like that before. We thought it would be really fun, and we are really open to you guys asking us pretty much anything. I mean, get weird with it. Ask us strange things like where we were on December 3rd, 1997, or what we were like in high school, or what our first pair of shoes were. I don't know, weird stuff like that. Like, we don't care. Or ask us serious stuff. Ask us about other TV shows, about movies, music, childhood stuff. I don't know, like, whatever. It's an ask us anything. And it's just a little way of saying thank you for all the support over the years, just letting you guys get to ask us all the fun stuff. So get your questions in by September 28th. You can always send us an email, damfinepod@gmail.com. You can hit us up over on Instagram. There will be a post over there so you can comment on the post, or you can send us a DM if you prefer. If you would like to remain anonymous, that's totally cool too. Just let us know when you send the question. All right, guys, thanks so much and enjoy this week's episode. Returning to the show this week is the Twin Peaks meme queen, a lover of Furbies, one of three Paige Jennings fans in the entire universe, and of course, our fellow bookhouse babe. It's Coral from Wholesome Peaks. Welcome back to the show, Coral.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for that intro. That is the best intro, and I don't think you could have introduced me any better than that.
Yay!
So. Yay!
And listeners, if some of those facts about Coral confused you, then clearly you're not following at Wholesome Peaks and you're not involved enough in her life. So get your act together, basically.
Hey, fix it. Yeah. Fix yourself.
I think Coral is wearing a shirt that says fix your hearts or die. And that's also what I want to say to you. So
I am. And I wore it on purpose today because of this episode.
I love it.
I'm going to hit you guys with some overall thoughts on this episode.
Okay, go ahead.
There's a hell of a lot going on in this episode. It really feels like in the writer's room, they were just kind of picking up plot, throwing it against the wall, seeing what was going to stick. And, ooh boy, you know, a lot of season one and season two of Twin Peaks is subverting the soap opera genre. It's commenting on the soap opera genre. This episode is firmly set within the soap opera genre. It's just there's so many things going on. The cast feels really sprawling again. I think past episodes have done a much better job of trying to introduce the new plot lines, new threads, all that kind of thing. Maybe not subtly, but like in a less heavy-handed way. Oh, there's just so much happening here. It does feel like the narrative structure is crumbling a little bit. But at the foundation of all of that is still Twin Peaks. It's still the Twin Peaks we know and love. And I am honestly still waiting for the quote-unquote bad Twin Peaks to happen, because even though this episode wouldn't go in my top 10, it's still Twin Peaks. And like, I think to love this show truly, you kind of have to love this stuff too. You can still comment on the missteps, the mistakes, all that kind of stuff, but it's still Twin Peaks. Like, does that make sense? It feels so simple overall to say, but like, I don't want Twin Peaks any other way. And I don't think that we get anything in Twin Peaks later on without all of this stuff. You know, even if it's like, this is the section of the bread that just didn't get cooked properly. It's a little gooey, but, you know, it's still great out of the oven.
Yeah. Yeah.
Coral, well, what did Coral, you think?
Yeah. I want to hear Coral's thoughts.
I was so, you always have me on, and I know this one was just like a lot of scheduling conflicts and it just right. worked out perfectly, but you always have me on at the best episodes. I was like, we get little Nikki, we get Denise, we get Evelyn, we get so much. We yeah. get some really great quotes, and I was just, oh yes, I'm so excited to be with you guys for this episode.
Oh good. It is fun. It is a fun episode. It's just like, it's overwhelming.
Yeah, it's overwhelming, but there's a lot to talk about and a For lot sure. of introduction to some,
yes.
some of the most hated
yes.
and some of the most loved things that happen in the show.
Agreed. What are you thinking over there, Mels?
I actually agree with both of you, which is probably not a surprise, obviously. There are some really heartfelt, like really good messages and things like in this episode that I really gravitated towards that I really loved. I can see how moments like that would be overshadowed by the goofiness that's going on as well. You know what I mean? So like, it unfortunately will get wrapped up in what people do call the quote unquote bad Twin Peaks, right? Just like the nutty, like soap opera-ish, like off the wall stuff. That isn't what, when we talk about, or at least for me, when I think about and talk about Twin Peaks, these are not the moments that come up for me. You know what I mean? Like, these aren't the things where I'm like, and then let me tell you about this woman that could leg press, you know, 600 pounds. No, I don't, that doesn't come up, but I love it nonetheless. So yeah, it's not my favorite because there are definitely introductions to things where I'm like, let's great. Okay. But, overall, it doesn't bother me. Like, I still watched it and enjoyed it. You know, I never once looked up and was like, how much time is left in this episode? You know, like, it never was that. So, yeah, I'm kind of in the middle of the road with it. Right. So,
yeah, it's crazy that it's an episode that we get such an interesting conversation about the White Lodge and the Black Lodge. And right. then we have Evelyn Marsh.
Exactly. That's exactly like. And that's why I'm saying, like, the more not good stuff overshadows the stuff that's like wholesome and the things that you really should be picking up from here, because right. the other stuff people are like, all right, this is a little too much. You know what I'm talking about? Like, too soap opera.
Yeah, and it's funny, like you say, this isn't what comes up when I talk about Twin Peaks or when I think about Twin Peaks. For the most part, I agree, but this storyline with James is something that has always stayed with me. Like, it is one of the things that I think about when I think about Twin Peaks. No matter how ridiculous it is, it's like, I think that's what I mean, too. It's like, this is Twin Peaks. So we kind of just have to love it, you know? Or not kind of have to, but whatever. You guys get what I'm saying.
I kind of just force it out of my mind. Just kidding. High hopes for this one, everybody.
Well, let's get into it. I'm going to start with our damn fine facts. Of course, we've got the date tracker, and this is we're recording this episode before episode 10 has been released. So we don't have a full verdict yet from our damn fine listeners on when we are. We did chat with Coral before we started recording. She's on our side with all of this. So if we're going by the DFTV canon, then this episode takes place on Wednesday, March 15th. But maybe it's the 16th. I don't know. Time in Twin Peaks. Let's move on. The second and final damn fine fact for this week is that this is David Duchovny's TV debut. So he had been in a couple of movies prior to this, but X-Files wouldn't come until 1993. And what a way to get your start on television, playing a woman.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Are we ready? We open up with James's new impression of Dumb and Dumber on their cross-country trip as he begins his wild ride. All right. I'm going to tell you right now, I got three sentences. I got three sentences. And here they go for this scene with James. Not James on a bike. Dumb and Dumber on the road trip. Why does he look confused to be operating a motorcycle?
The face he makes is as though he's never smiled in his life. It's like, it's like he's trying to smile, but he does not know how, or perhaps he's purposely trying to catch bugs in his teeth. I don't know what this man is doing, but I got to tell you, I love this opening. It doesn't bode very well for the episode itself, but it's so fucking cheesy and fun. I was just like, I love it. We're on James's wild ride. Take me away. I want to be here.
Yeah, I'll just say that I watched it twice in preparation and I laughed both times.
Yes.
Okay. I can't with James and it's too funny.
It's the music too. It's the music. It's so, I think the music gets a little repetitive in this episode, but it's so, I don't know. It's so emblematic of this part of Twin Peaks.
Yeah, that's true. I'm feeling like ganged up on right now. I'm not going to lie. Like I'm feeling like 2-1 on this and I don't know if I like it, but... It's not that, yes, it's cheesy. Like, I totally agree with you. But for me, that's exactly the sound that came out right there. Don't edit that out. It was, you know, like, not this. I don't want to do this. You know what I mean? Like, but that's
it reminded me a lot of when we were covering season 2, episode 2 or 3. It's called Coma. It's when James sings Just You for the first time. And I've fallen in love with it in a different way. Again, like I'm searching for better words, but it's just so Twin Peaks to me, this weird James stuff. And Just You is so part of the DNA of the show. And him on this motorcycle with just credits rolling is, just, I don't know. It's just, it works for me. I still don't like James, but it just works for me.
Cooper and Harry question Betty Briggs on the disappearance of Major Briggs, to which she gives little information that isn't classified. Andy and Hawk have the perfect wedding gift for Dougie, and Gordon Cole lets Cooper know that the DEA is sending a good, no-nonsense man, Dennis Bryson, to investigate.
Betty is so lovely. I mean, I love the way that her character is set up to be somebody that clearly understands Major Briggs's interests and that he is so sort of obsessed and focused on the woods. But I think she finds a lot of joy in it. She's not like the little old housewife that's like left behind when her husband goes off to do these grand adventures or whatever. Like, I think she's into it. I think she's just as into it as the Major is, but she's just not in that line of work, you know?
Yeah, she's one of my low-key favorites of the show. And this isn't a spoiler, but I think she, of all the casts, we talk about who aged the best. And I think we sleep on her a little bit. Because when I saw her in The Return, I was like, you really didn't look like you aged that much.
Yeah, she looks so great. Right. Oh my gosh. She is like Twin Peaks' own Pharrell, right? Doesn't everybody in Hollywood think he's a vampire?
I hadn't heard that. Look, I know they're not actually blood related, but look at the way that her son glowed up in The Return.
Exactly.
They're a beautiful family.
Okay. Bobby's not even in this episode, and yet here he is.
You're goddamn right he's making an appearance on this podcast.
I love it. Jasmine, you never week by week cease to amaze me. Okay. Yeah, so that whole thing was great. And then, honestly, you have that, and then... Here comes Andy. I love Andy. Don't get me wrong. He's such a doofus. Like, sometimes it annoys me though. Okay, like this is my second time going through it. The first time I was like, God, that's just so lovable, dumb Andy. You know what I mean? Like, gosh. Mm-hmm. And now sometimes I'm like, Andy, listen, let's have a talk. Okay. Lucy's pregnant. We don't know who baby daddy is. Okay. It's time to maybe, like, let's sharpen some of those tools you've got upstairs. Let's try to do some, you know, puzzles and sharpen your mind a little bit. You know what I mean? Like,
Mels, I think Andy is proving himself lately, though. The way he handled Dick in the last episode, the stuff he did. I think, yes, he is a doofus, but I think he's doing what he can with his limited capabilities, perhaps.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Jasmine there. I agree. Great.
2-1 again. All right. You know what? We're done with this podcast. Look at me. Bite the bullet. I'm out of here. Okay? No. No, I'm just teasing. That's all good. No, I know what you mean. But like just some things are just getting under my skin. And I don't like that. You know what I mean? Because I really do love Andy. But I'm just kind of like, you know, like, all right. And I know maybe it's supposed to be comedic relief. And I get it. Like, you know, I'm not. I understand that, But at the same time, it's like, yeah, but do we have to have so much of it? Like, we get it. Andy's right. not the brightest crayon in the box. That's fine. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. we don't, yeah, you know, we don't have to keep pulling the crayon out and showing everybody. Yeah. You know what I mean? And then we get Gordon Cole, which, you know, I was so excited about. And I love
always
that.
Good to hear his voice.
Always. I mean, the disrespect of the temp, though, to not pronounce Cooper's name correctly. But yes, she can.
How do you not know? I don't care if it's 50,000 people. We know it's not really 50,000 people.
Right.
But you have an FBI agent in your town and there's a murderer and it's like the only crime in town. Everyone's going to know who Del Cooper is.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Coral.
Especially a temp.
Agree.
Thank you. You're proving my point here because it's like, how do you flubber that? But yet you know exactly who's on the phone, Gordon Cole. You know what I mean? Like, who's somebody you don't know who that
well,
is.
Well, she
right?
knew who Gordon was because he screamed his name at
well,
her. You can't forget Gordon Cole's name.
Yeah.
I love that Gordon immediately has Coop's back without knowing whether or not any of these allegations are true. It kind of just serves to emphasize their bond that they have. You know, like when we first met Gordon in person, it was very clear that he and Coop have a history. And it's just nice that that friendship is, you know, still being established, still being built, all that kind of stuff. What frustrates me is that this is, Gordon should know that it's Denise and not Dennis. And I dislike the foundation that's laid here because later when we meet Denise, it feels like it's been set up as a gotcha. It's yeah. actually a woman. So I think that that's a misstep. And I think that that's 90s television for you because, you know, 30 years ago, I mean, we're still not that progressive. No. We're still not that great, but we're better than we were. But this is frustrating to me. I think it should have just been presented as Denise from the start.
Yeah. Well, and I agree with you. And this is how I tried to not excuse it because I'm not excusing it. But this is how I tried to, like, give myself a little bit of solace. Not, I don't think solace is – I'm having a hard time with words today. I'm just going to
– I know what you're getting at, though.
Like, for me to kind of be – I'm going to give it a small pass, but I had to do a lot of talking to myself about it. And what I really said to myself was, okay, perhaps in some weird way, I don't know – and we don't really know until later on when Denise does give us her story. Maybe Gordon doesn't know it yet. And he's hard of hearing. What if someone told him, but he didn't hear it? I don't know. That's number, you know, that's the first layer. Second layer is, I don't know if Gordon screaming over an intercom, telling Cooper if he does know about Dennis's transition to Denise, if that would have made sense in the scene.
Agreed. It would have been weird to set up over the phone call. I just almost wonder if Coop should have just been like, oh, I'm not sure who this agent is, but, like, you know, whatever.
I've always, yeah, from my first watch around, I didn't like the way that it got introduced to begin with. So,
yeah, but. Right. I'm with both of you. I think that Denise could have been introduced better by Cole, but we did get that nice scene where we see Cooper see her for the first time
yes.
and just immediately accept her. And if we didn't have Gordon say Dennis, we wouldn't have had that scene. However, it still should have been different. Like, yeah. I like the end product that we got there, but
right.
it was still...
The execution wasn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cooper is confident in himself as the investigation begins. He's going to represent himself. What a man, what a man, what a man, what a mighty good man.
What a mighty, mighty good Coop.
And plans on seeing beyond fear and looking at the world with love, to which Roger orders a complete psychological workup on this man. I mean, straight off the bat, it's the Apple computer for me. Okay, like, I died
old
because
tech
alert. All I could think about was number munchers in school on the old Apple Mac that we had at our school. Number munchers was a floppy disk game. Some of you are not even going to know remotely what I'm speaking about here.
Floppy disk just sounds like something dirty to them.
Exactly. But I immediately got flashback to that time in my life where I was like, when is it going to be my turn to get on the old Macintosh and play Number Munchers? But I love this scene because it is the beginning of the investigation for Coop, but he is so confident in himself and he is like, I don't need representation. I don't need defense. I am aware of everything that went down. I was there and in sound mind. I'm aware that I probably crossed, you know, some boundaries doing some things, but I am okay with that. Like, I just, he's projecting. And for me, on the other side of the table, I feel like that intimidates them because they're like, wait a minute now. I'm supposed to be here investigating you, and you're supposed to be shaking in your boots type situation, you know? And it's because it's Cooper.
Well, he even says, like, this isn't how we would think you would handle yourself. You know, there's a certain rule book that you're supposed to play by. I mean, Coop's priorities are clearly shifting, right? Something about this trip to Twin Peaks has change something internally for him. And it's like these trips that you take that change the way you look at the world and, again, like kind of shift your priorities internally. And I don't know whether or not it's a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know if we can even qualify it like that. You know, like, is this making sense? Like, there's something as happy as I am for Cooper to have made or to have found the love of this town and to be so happy here. I don't know. There's something unsettling about it too in the back
Absolutely.
Of my head.
Absolutely.
And then that lingering glance at like his gun and his badge, it's like he's making peace with the idea that this might not be where his life is headed anymore.
It almost reminds me a little bit of David Lynch's life story too. He always wanted to be a painter and just different things happened to him that led him to where he is now. And I think maybe I'm grasping at straws here, but Cooper looking at his gun and his badge could be similar to David Lynch looking at his canvas and his paint. I mean, he still paints and he still enjoys it, but so many different things happened to make him become a filmmaker. I can see a parallel there.
I love thinking that, you know, like, and we all know this, like people that, you know, make art, whether it be a painting or a film or they write a book, there's always a little bit of themselves in what they're doing, right? Sure. So I really love to sit here and think that whole part right there of Cooper making peace with something that he loved so much, but that not being perhaps the correct path in life for him or right at this moment or whatever it may be. I love that being a reflection of David.
Sure.
We're on a first name basis here. Of David.
Well, after
you know,
that threesome.
Bada boom. Who could forget?
Ooh.
But yeah, you know, but him discovering this other part, unlocking all of these, because that's really what it is, right? Is it's unlocking something inside of yourself. And you have an awakening to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's Cooper's words right here where he's like, I'm seeing beyond fear and I'm looking at the world with love. There's something that's been unlocked and awakened inside of him. And it doesn't involve necessarily being an FBI agent at the center of it. And I love that, you know? Nadine is taking Twin Peaks High by storm as she chats up Donna about Mike, and rightfully so, ignores Donna's questions about where's James. Okay, so I'm going to tell you what, Nadine bopping around in her ponytail and her patch. We're talking about PP, double P, ponytail and patch. Woo! But she is bopping around here, chewing her bubble gum.
Mm-hmm.
She's here to chew gum and kick ass, and she is almost out of gum. You know what I'm talking about around here? She is the queen of Twin Peaks High. Her main objective right now is to be like, Donna, are you cool with me just slipping right on in with Mike? You two aren't together anymore. What about Ed? Listen, this is a woman after my own heart, because when she gives this explanation, I was like,
You can't argue with it.
You cannot argue with this. She said, well, Mike is for at school, and Ed is for at home, and Ed be acting like my daddy, and I'm not here for that. I was like, yes, Nadine, give him the tea.
Wendy Roby is alive in this scene. Like, she is just giving it everything, and it's so fun to watch. Like, the chewing of the gum, there's something about the gum that like brings the supernatural elements of Twin Peaks into what's happening here, because, you know, we have like that gum you like is going to come back in style. So anytime I see somebody chewing gum or anything to do with gum, it just links it back to that for me. But she is, oh my God, she's sparkling. She is that sparkle sound effect from the last episode when she raises her arms up after, you know, the cheerleading routine. And What I love the most about this, though, is that we have a show full of teenagers, and our first real plot in the high school is with a, you know, a grown ass woman.
Yes,
it's perfect.
I had that written down too.
I mean, how incredible that it took this. It feels more. It feels less strange to see Nadine at the lockers than it does to see Donna at the lockers. Like, absolutely. Donna feels out of place.
100%. Yeah. Like, I just want to see a story about Nadine at high school. Like, sure. You don't even have to bring the other key players into it. Let's just follow her around.
Sure.
And her day-to-day antics at Twin Peaks High. I love
it. Catch you later.
Donna does, however, try to ask if Nadine has seen James. And Nadine is like, oh, you're talking about Eddie's friend with the motorcycle? Nah. I just love it. You know what I mean? It's just like, that was my Grease impression, because that's what it reminds me. Like,
oh my God, so many Grease vibes. Yeah.
Yes. Like, it to me, it was just like Sandy at high school, you know, in her long cheerleading skirt, that type of thing.
Ooh, it was more Frenchy vibes. Frenchy, well, maybe even Jan.
Maybe a mix, because I think the cheerleading aspect to me is what gives me Sandy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also Sandy wore the high pony.
True.
Okay. But yes, her mannerisms as far as like how she talks and what she's after is definitely a Pink Ladies vibe. That's for sure. Mm-hmm.
I do feel like I have a moral obligation to throw out that if the genders were reversed, this would all be super creepy.
For sure.
Oh, absolutely.
I feel like someone's going to come at me if I don't throw that out there.
No, it's 100% we're on the same page.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Do you think I want to see Ed show up at the high school pretending like he is a senior in high school? Hail to the no.
No. I think that since we know that Nadine is going through something, it's forgivable in a way. And I think it does kind of subvert that trope in a way where very often we see creepy old men trying to be with younger women or whatever. It doesn't forgive it. It doesn't make it not true. But I think it's just interesting that it sort of flipped on its head, maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
As long as I'm just watching her like be ridiculous and not
sure
around Mike so much. I love it all. It is so fun.
Yeah.
And I will say this, it does walk a fine line. I know I make jokes about her, like, you know, trolling for dick, right? But I will be serious here. Yeah, like, it still is inappropriate because I'm assuming Mike is still underage at this point. I don't know if he's 18 yet or not, but I don't think Nadine's taking advantage of Mike because we know Nadine's state of mind right now, right?
Mm-hmm. There's no grooming element there. It's just her.
There's no grooming
being into
right,
him.
Right.
Yes.
And so in a sense, you know, it still would be creepy if a guy had a head injury and did it. But it's not that grooming thing. And I think grooming is what makes it the worst. And also, I like to operate under and I know there's probably, you know, Wikipedias out there that will contradict what I'm about to say. But just for my own sake, I operate under the idea that every single teenager that we follow in Twin Peaks is 18. And that makes everything easier for me.
I can ride with that. They're all in their senior year, whatever.
Slamming down a pair of gloves O.J. Simpson would be proud of. James encounters Evelyn Marsh in what one could only describe as an opening to a terrible porn.
Yes. Love it.
If the glove don't fit, you must have quit. But in this case, that's the opposite. Legit. That's legit. Because if James's hand did not look like the hand of a tiny human when he pulled it out of that glove. I mean, what are these industrial isotoners? Did you see how big those fucking gloves were?
I did not notice. I love this detail.
Obviously, I'm the only one that noticed they were comically large.
I gotta go back.
Hopefully someone else noticed it and they will get my O.J. Simpson.
We'll get a picture and we'll figure out how to share it on Instagram for sure.
Okay. And so here comes James, whatever. Like, what kills me is it's just honest to God was like the opening of a terrible porn to me. Like,
it should win the Guinness record for like the most layers in a cheese dip. Like, it's just so thick with cheese. It's and for once, James isn't the worst offender. True. Like, Evelyn is at 250,000,000% from the moment that we meet her. This actress was so fucking geared up for this role. It's incredible. And she's giving it everything.
Oh, she, yes, she is.
Like,
yes, she
wow. is. That story about, and then the neighbors come out and, you know, we, oh, he was such a good dude. It's like, what are you doing? Who are you? And what is this?
Yeah, she's giving away everything, including her entire career, because I don't think she's done anything.
That was great. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
She really found the right one when James Hurley walked into that bar.
She really did, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm talking about her meter for who can I get under my claws
mm-hmm.
was off the charts when this dum-dum walked into that bar. I mean,
she saw the forehead and was like, this is the one.
Exactly. She saw that before she saw him. But yeah, and then folks, this is where I was going to tell you, my grandparents, their names were James and Evelyn. I shit you not. And I did name my James after that one. And then when I came into the Twin Peaks, I was like, could I have a worse connection with Twin Peaks in my family than James and Evelyn?
I mean, can I also say that James's best friend yes. is Maddie?
Is Maddie.
Which is incredible. Yeah,
absolutely.
It's my favorite thing ever.
I mean, I'm living in a Twin Peaks dream, okay? Let's just put it that way. Well, in an effort to impress Lucy, Nick shows up with little Nikki, but only finds Big Andy. So, little Andy. I mean, okay, this is where I hate saying the things I said earlier. I don't like to say that his foolish antics are getting on my nerves, even though they are, because I do like these moments where he's like setting up flowers for Lucy.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I love Andy, you know, I really do. And it was great to see him doing something that wasn't like silly, right? Like, I was glad to see him doing something very real Andy-ish when Dick comes into the sheriff's department. You know what I mean by that?
Yes. I like that Andy's motives are actually built around having a better relationship, making sure Lucy is okay, because Dick is only going to take this kid for a malted if Lucy is around to show it off to. Whereas Andy is leaving flowers, Andy's cool with taking these guys out for a malted, and Lucy's not there and she might never find out, but he's going to do it because that's the right thing to do. And right. I think it's like there's a curve there, like Andy's always going to be better than Dick in terms of like morals, but it's still nice to see.
The boys talk about the White Lodge and its shadow, the Black Lodge, when Dennis shows up. But to everyone's surprise, Dennis is now Denise. And may I just add, she is a snack. Okay, let me tell you something. Denise is the most beautiful woman I have ever laid eyes on. And that is not a joke. That is not me being funny. David Duchovny, as a woman, beautiful. I cannot take my eyes off of her. Like, I love it. Anyway, yeah. That's just me, like, professing my love to Denise. I love you, Denise. I love
And
you.
I think David brings a lot of, like, gravitas is not the right word, but, like, he just makes it so much better than it might have been in another actor's hands. Like, I feel like stuff around Denise feels like a joke sometimes, but Denise herself is so real and authentic to me.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was appreciating that last night so much. I was just thinking about David went in there and he made Denise his own.
Yeah.
Denise is, they say Denise is no nonsense. Mm-hmm. And Denise was no nonsense.
Yes.
Absolutely. Denise is just a woman who has a job and she takes it very seriously. Yeah. And, you know, she is who she is. And any other actor could have gone in there and played it up for laughs or, you know, made her very yes. flamboyant. But yes. every woman is different. Not all women are flamboyant mm-hmm. and girly. Denise
Speak
is
for
a
yourself,
no nonsense.
Girlfriend. Just kidding.
Not all.
but you're right, though. Like, I think David Duchovny could have played Denise with a lot of strange flourishes or different physical comedy, let's say, but it's just, you're right, no nonsense.
It felt very natural, which is what it should feel like.
Yeah. You
know, and that's what I loved about it. Let's just put it out there. During this time on TV, if this was a storyline on any other television show, it would be so blatant, and I'm I'm using this in quotes, and but this is how it was at that time, a man in a wig. It would be so blatant.
Yes.
That it is.
They would still have like a bunch of facial hair or something. Honestly, there'd be a lot more jokes happening. They'd probably be dead by the end of the episode. Like, that's, I mean, the fact that this is a very high up DEA agent is incredible, but it sucks. Harry and Hawk fucking suck in this scene, and I hate it.
It broke my heart. I love Hawk so much. And I was like, Harry was nice. Harry shook her hand, and Hawk just stared at her. And I was like, no, not Hawk. Don't do that, Hawk.
But then even Harry makes the, oh, they're in for a surprise or whatever. It's like, it's so unnecessary. It doesn't work even as a comedic moment because it's just so cringeworthy. And I love that Denise is just like, whatever, I am who I am. And like, I'm not going to let any of this bother me. And as if we needed more evidence that Cooper is such a good person, you know, as we talked about before, like he just is accepting. It's not even an issue.
Well, and really, the end of the scene, I was just very disappointed that even after we meet Denise and we get Denise's sort of backstory here, right, about her transition, you still have Hawk saying that's a good color for him.
The misgendering, yeah.
I don't like it.
It's frustrating because it's so, I don't know, this is a much bigger problem. I mean, obviously, in 2021, we would hope that this would be played by a trans actor. And we wouldn't be having to have this kind of conversation really about it. Because I think it's okay to show characters that are bigoted in this way and have issues with trans people because it's reality. And I think we can have good conversations from that. But this really is just played for laughs. It doesn't make sense to me for Hawk's character. It really just doesn't. It doesn't fall in line with who we know him to be. It's just, there's some good stuff here and there's some really bad and problematic and uncomfortable stuff here.
Yeah, and it's very disappointing for Hawk because before Denise does come, we do get these amazing...
Right. Yeah, we should backtrack.
But we do get this amazing, like, interaction where Hawk is talking about the White Lodge and the Black Lodge, right? And Hawk he's very spiritual. I think that's why it was so disappointing, that very last sentence of the scene, because we just had Hawk explaining to Harry, you know, about other worlds. Listen, if you can say there are other worlds, then gender fluidity and all of this, do you see where I'm going with this? Like, it's all part of that.
It's so fucking simple to say the word her.
Exactly.
Like, it's not hard. Yes.
It's not hard.
And if you can not even suspend your belief, but if you can open up your mind to the idea that there are these places, that there are other worlds, like, why couldn't you open your mind to Denise?
Exactly.
And that's a good point, is I feel like just like Denise is kind of being used as a prop and everything, I feel like Hawk is also used as a prop for, you know,
fair.
Native Americans and they have these, you know, beliefs and stuff. But I don't want to speak too much because I'm not going to be able to back it up with a lot of information like other people would. But I've read that, you know, there are tribes that believed in two spirits.
Right.
And we're going to leave all that out because we just want to kind of whitewash what we think.
Right.
A Native person would talk about. So I think two different demographics were really kind of hurt in this scene. Like, I loved Hawk in the scene. I loved how he talked about everything. I loved building up the lore. But I think two different groups of people were pretty disserviced in this episode.
I agree. I feel like the one small saving grace for me was the way that Harry chimed in and said it's a local legend that goes way back. So it does establish the fact that White Lodge and Black Lodge is more of a Twin Peaks thing. But I think being, you know, three intelligent women watching this show, we can understand that, like, yeah, that's kind of playing a Native population for, like you said, kind of as a prop or just using that one part of them to tell this story.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I've said this on the show before, I do have like Native American ancestry. I do not identify as Native American because it would be a disservice. Let's just put it that way. Like, I'm not Native American. My grandmother was Native American. A lot of things, the stories she would tell me, this is not Evelyn, this is my paternal grandmother. She told me a lot of things that were very, I couldn't believe happened you know, to the Native American
for sure
population. But and their stories are very whitewashed. We in school, like you don't get the full effect of what they go through still to this day. But yes, it's can be touchy for me too, just having that small bit in my own background when I watch any show where they use lore, legends, things like that in this way. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Because sometimes it's like, they're not making fun of it, but they're using it. And that's somebody's culture. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's not just done to Native American people. This is just this specific instance right here. But, yeah. You know, so it's an unfortunate thing that is used, but I agree with Coral. I think two groups of people were given a disservice during this.
And Melz, I have the same background as you. My grandmother was Native, obviously for the same reasons. I don't have the culture. And unfortunately, I don't have the culture because they were very whitewashed. They were assimilated into culture. They were very ashamed of their past. All of her brothers were white passing. She was not. And there was just nothing there. It was just completely stripped from them. And I think, you know, things like these are hurtful to watch because I know that my grandmother never got to experience her history because she was too busy trying to be a white person.
Yeah.
Mm, damn.
Yeah. And I don't want to negate anything that you guys are saying, but the Black Lodge and the White Lodge is still a great conversation. Like the stuff absolutely. That we get here is still fantastic. I mean, yeah. I think it also helps that Major Briggs has also brought it up previously. Like he was the first person to sort of talk about the White Lodge. This is the stuff that makes the episode for me because it's the supernatural, occult, magical stuff that I really love about Twin Peaks. And I like that we're at this point in the show. Like, we're firmly in the middle of season two and we're just starting to have these conversations, which I did kind of find surprising sort of looking back on the timeline. But now we're here. Now we can start talking about these themes and see how they're going to play out in the show. And I think that's exciting.
And to your point, it was Garland that brought all of this up first. It
right.
was then Coop brought it up to everyone and Hawk was the one to volunteer that information.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, there was that feeling of prop, but Garland Briggs was the one that brought all of this to the forefront. And so you're right. It's more Twin Peaks lore than anything else.
Right, exactly.
But I think what I'm saying and what you're saying can be true at the same time.
Yeah.
I don't think they negate each other.
Yeah. And honestly, the White and Black Lodge is something that makes Twin Peaks great. It's the core of the story, right? Like
for me, yeah, for a lot of people, for sure.
Right. Yeah. Well, you have the White Lodge, and then you have everybody has this in the shadows, kind of like when I was talking about the Us movie last week. Like,
yes, I thought about that during that scene.
Yeah, and we have Shadow, and it that's how it is. And I love that even if you're not educated in this, that a TV show will bring it to your attention. Like that there are these things, you know.
Well, and there's a lot here. Like they talk about the Dweller on the Threshold, which goes back a long time to I think it's like theosophy or like a certain type of philosophy that, I mean, this has been written about for a long time too. And maybe they stole ideas from certain cultures. I'm really not sure. But yeah, these are like ancient ideas. Like these aren't anything that Twin Peaks has created, but it's using this kind of lore to build its own mythos, really. Yeah.
Yeah. Alrighty. Well, past all of that, I really do love the conversation about other worlds. For selfish reasons, it does make me think of Stephen King and The Dark Tower, other worlds than these.
Sure, yeah.
And I love the explanation and the idea of the White Lodge and the Black Lodge. I love that in order to
reach perfection.
I was going to say attain, but you're right. Reach perfection, you have to move through your shadow self. I love the imagery of what that all means to you, even in a day-to-day perspective. You have to move through. I mean, this could be trauma. This could be, you know, whatever it may be, to attain something, to have an awakening, to be at peace with something. You have to move. You have to work through that hurt. You have to work through the shadow, mm-hmm. you know, I'm so drawn to that concept.
So drawn to it.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
But it's no light task though. Like if you don't confront this with If you confront the Black Lodge with imperfect courage, it will utterly annihilate your soul. That's terrifying.
Nadine's flirting skills are out of this world as she attempts to catch Mike by leg pressing 600 pounds. All right, the fact that she, first of all, she's in the boys' locker room. Let's just be, I do not.
Is it a locker room or the gym?
I do.
The gym.
It's the gym.
I don't think so. The first time around, listen, the first time around, I thought it was a gym. The second time around, I didn't see no other girls in there.
Well, yeah, because girls don't go to the gym, Mels.
Okay.
It's a male space.
Listen, I had to do PE and I hated every minute of it. So don't tell me.
Same.
Listen, I hated it so much that the coach was like, fine, just grade these papers, okay? Just sit here and grade these papers. All I did was bitch that I didn't want to go out there and fucking run around the track. I don't want
to
do this.
I just stopped bringing my uniform to school.
Oh.
I just kept reusing the same doctor's note. Like, no, I don't gym. It says here that I don't gym. Thank you.
Okay, Sharon Clueless. I can't have balls flying up my nose.
That's a better method than me. I passed out once and they stopped making me do stuff.
Aww.
No, you're smart. I should have done that.
I think Coral did it on purpose. I mean, did you?
Well, I hadn't eaten that day and I was the people pleaser and I don't know why I wanted the gym coach to like me because I hate gym, but I was like, I'm going to run. I'm going to actually run today. I'm going to make her like me. And then right before we made it back into the building, I collapsed. So don't run a mile with no food in your system.
No, bad idea.
In the Texas heat when it's like 100 degrees outside.
Yeah. For the record, I didn't think she did it on purpose. I just suddenly was like, why didn't I just pass out?
Fair.
All right. This is why I think Nadine's in the boys' locker room, because she's Nadine. B, she's after Mike. Mm-hmm. It looks to me like it's, honest to God, I think it's like them pumping weights for wrestling. I think it's the wrestling team. I think they're in the boys' locker room.
Yeah.
I think it's a weight room. I don't think it's a So we had a weight room. Well, you went to a tiny, tiny school. I went to a big school. You probably went to a school that was more like Twin Peaks size, but because they want us to believe there's 50,000 people there, I'm going to assume it's as big as my school. We had a weight room specifically for the wrestlers, and you never catch a girl in there.
But maybe that's why it's not translating for me, because I think that she's in, like...
That's fair. Yeah.
The boys' section. You know what I mean? Like, because we also... The football team did have a weight room. We didn't use that in general PE, but I felt like a sports team would have a specific weight area. So, like, before football practice or wrestling practice, you're in there like pumping weights like that. So that's why I thought she's in like a boys only area, because then the coach comes in and says something boys, and then he says, do you want to try out for wrestling? So I was like, Nadine's, and she just walked right into the boys locker room, fucking put the pin in 600 pounds. She is leg pressing and she is winking with one eye. Like, what's up with you? I can leg press you. 10 of you. How about
that? Oh my God. Yeah. She's not nervous at all. There's so much confidence within Nadine. And I like, it's so interesting that we get the Denise stuff in the same episode as this, because I think on any other show, and I think even still to today, a woman that's this strong would be played as like, oh, Mike feels emasculated because of this. And it's being played for jokes. And he's like, oh, I can't keep up with Nadine or whatever. But like, that doesn't even really come into play. Mike is more just like, what do you want? Like, why are you following? You're 35, probably. Yeah. What are you doing here? So I kind of liked that, again, being flipped on its head in a way. But
at the end of the day, good on you, Nadine. Like, I love her confidence. Like, this is... When I talk about how much I love Nadine, I think everybody kind of probably gets this point by now, but we see Nadine in the beginning. She tries to complete suicide. She's going through so much in her life. She's like obsessed with silent drapes. You know, like this. And after a failed suicide attempt, she just emerges as this confident, like amazing person. You know what I mean? And I, even though it is kind of wrapped up in, well, oops, she thinks she's a teenager again, I still love it for her because this is what she deserves. You know what I mean? When it comes to Nadine, like, she deserves to, if she wants to go into the boys' locker room and fucking leg press 600 pounds, let her do it. Okay.
Well, it's nice to see her happy, I think, because we saw her at such a low point in her life. But that's why I do think that she was successful in her attempt to end her life, because this is a different life.
It's true. And I love your point of view. I do love your point of view on that. I really do. Harry and Josie enjoy a tender embrace as she finally tells Harry about her past and how Andrew Packard fits into the puzzle. Okay. You know what? I'm going to let y'all have this one. I'm going to sit back for a minute.
Josie and Harry are incredibly uncomfortable. I don't buy that they're in a real relationship. The silence was so awkward. It made it feel like that scene lasted for 100 hours. Like, I don't buy that they're in a relationship together. What I'm happy about is that Harry is not settling anymore for any of Josie's bullshit. He wants the truth, and I think Harry deserves that. The problem is Josie has been played, and we've talked about this multiple times, I think purposefully, you can never get a read on Josie. We don't know when she's telling the truth. We don't know when she's embellishing facts about whatever's going on, because that's what she needs to do to protect herself. And I think we do get more insight as to why she does that within this story. I do believe the most of it. I do believe she does fear for her life, but some of what she says conflicts with things that we know to be true because we saw them on screen. And so I'm just, for a long time, I was like, I love this. I love not being able to read Josie. It makes her a really interesting character. I'm kind of bored of it now. Like, it's reaching a limit for me where I'm just like, okay, I don't, just wrap it up.
I have no comments. I have said it before. I'll say it again. All of that storyline makes my eyes glaze over. Mm. Unless Pete shows up, I don't care.
Yes.
And I'm fully 100% whatever. And when you say in like this, the silence between them, to me, it was so loud. Like, it told so much.
Yes.
Where I was just like, this, I've never felt it really between Harry and Josie. It's funny, actually. Because of what we know about Harry, I believe it from his perspective, but when you look at the two together, you know what? Do you see what I'm saying there?
Like, it doesn't work.
There's no chemistry. There's nothing that makes me believe. There are no Bobby and Shelley.
There's not even a slight spark. There's nothing.
Nothing. And I'm just like, stop trying to sell me on these two. And I'm not trying to be ugly when I say this, but I don't really care about Josie anymore. I hate to say it, but after she made the big grand spectacle of getting out of town, I'm kind of okay with it ending there. You know what I mean? Like, I do want to say I have a soft spot when she does tell her backstory, because if it is true, yeah, that's very hard. I mean,
for
just
sure.
Think about it. Like, your family sells you because you're a female. Mm-hmm. You're on the streets. Then someone does save you from it. I mean, it's Reba McEntire's song Fancy. That's exactly what it is.
It's also just like all too relevant for current world events where it fucking sucks. And I really feel for Josie for sure, but I'm just bored of the back and forth.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. Like, I can't even, it's hard for me to even like feel an emotion about it because I'm over that. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So while Roger enjoys a slice of heaven pie at the Double R, I meant Hank and Ernie show up. Norma questions their trip and lets Ernie know that Vivian has gone back to Seattle. And can we all breathe a sigh of relief that, thankfully, Ernie didn't catch anything on his trip?
So funny, when you said Doofus and Doofus, I thought for sure you meant Dick and Andy, not Hank and Ernie.
Not yet. No,
a lot of Doofuses, a lot of Doofi. I don't know, at the Double R today.
I would like to think that Doofus is like moose, and we just use it like...
Sure, yeah.
I do like Doofi with two I's on the end of it, though.
A lot of Doofi at the Double R. Yeah, man, I love Norma's eye roll as she's talking to Ernie. Like, she doesn't buy his bullshit for a second. Like, not even a second. She's just like, get the fuck out of here.
Again, I hate this. I hate saying these things, but I don't even really care about Hank and Ernie and all of
that. Same. Yeah.
I don't.
I don't even know what Hank has over Ernie aside from telling Vivian that he was in prison. But what Ernie is about to do is so much worse. It's like, you should just go home. You should have skipped the hunting trip.
Ugh.
And just told Vivian the truth. Like, Hank doesn't have, I don't know. It's just, yeah, let's move on. And I just want to say that the stool spin is an excellent prank. Primo prank. I can't wait to pull it on someone.
I just love it. You know, we've gone through so many scenes of people that I don't care about and stories I don't care about at all, that I was just, even though, you know, people pick on the little Nikki storyline and it is pretty stupid, I was so relieved to get back there. And the stool spinning was so funny. And I loved how Andy fell off the stool. I think that Harry did a great job performing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I do want to talk about that. It's just like antics. But it was so nice to have that after what we just had to look at with Ernie and Hank. You know what I'm saying?
That's fair.
Like,
yeah.
And I have a soft spot for little Nikki. I don't know if it's a story they're telling about him. You know what I mean? Like, he just needs a mentor. He needs a positive something in his life. And somehow he ended up with Dick Tremaine.
Yeah.
Which is not so gonna give him that. But by way of Dick Tremaine, he does get Andy. You know what I mean? Mm. Like,
yeah.
And I love how, because little Nikki asks for something, Andy just, it's very simple. He's like, we'll just do this. You know what I mean? Like, but it has to be this whole production with Dick. And I don't like Dick. But I do love to see Andy. And this is obviously why I think that Andy should be the father of the baby. And he will be a great dad, because he just, even though he spins and falls off of that seat, you could just tell that it's a kid that he just met earlier. And he's so natural and so nice to him, you know? And that's a good thing about Andy. And I love it.
He's a sweetie.
Shit. All right. More of this. James gets a forehead erection while talking about his love for writing. And Evelyn invites him to stay with her as he fixes up her husband's Jaguar, which is code for take her to Cougar Town and possibly more. All I have here is Jesus, more terrible porn. This is awful.
Mm.
You know, blank stares from, like, it's obvious Evelyn and her husband's got something, like, they don't get along. Something's going on there. Poor James is so oblivious because he's like, I'm going to fix your car. I'll help you out. Oh, you're going to give me room and board. Like, you know, but and it's a lot of blank stares from James, which I think
we're supposed to read as him having, like, philosophical moments with himself, because he's saying all these things about, oh, it's not really a place, it's a feeling. And sometimes I just get on my bike. And yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. This is, I love that you're referring to it as a bad porn, because that's so funny to me. Like, this is what you get when you ask for dialogue and storylines in porn, people. Okay?
Absolutely.
It's supposed to be about fucking.
Listen, I'm Googling porn, I don't need to know
as
that you ordered a large all the time, all the time. Sure. I don't need the
doing it right now.
I've been doing it all morning. Listen, I'm not watching you order pizza and a man show up. That's not what I'm here for. I'm not into having sex with the pizza. Let's get just cut the camera on when it starts and then cut it off when it's over.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fair.
I don't need you to, when it's over, also be like, ooh, my God, my husband's on his way. I don't get all that. This ain't Skinamax.
Okay. Well, okay, more seriously than the porn stuff, which I love, but I almost wrote down that this was the first time that we've been outside of Twin Peaks, but that's not necessarily true because One Eye Jax is in Canada. Mm-hmm. But One Eye Jax feels so tied to Twin Peaks in a way and to more supernatural stuff in the show. This feels like our first time out of Twin Peaks, and it feels, and I don't know if that's why the story feels so foreign and strange, and perhaps it's purposeful in that way, but yeah, it feels like we're too far from home right now.
I'll just say he has the best sweater on.
True. I agree.
It's so ridiculous and does not fit his character. That's all I had to say. We can move on because no one wants to talk about the stupid scene anymore.
In an unusually touching moment for Ben Horn, he reminisces while watching old home movies. Hank the Horrible interrupts him and lets him know that he's out at One-Eyed Jack's. But what Ben really wants to know is, What do you know about feng shui?
Love that you said that, because that's what I have in my notes too. It's like Ben is learning about this system, and it's like the one thing left in his life that he can have control over is the arrangement of the furniture in his office. He's just like grasping at straws for sure.
Absolutely.
I love this scene, though. This is one of my favorites in the episode. I love this actor. I love when he's given more to do than just be the cigar-chomping bad guy, which he does great at. But the way he plays this scene, he goes and he gives who I assume his mom is a kiss through the projector. Like, this nostalgia is so sweet, yet also incredibly unhinged. And I think it's because we're not used to that from Ben Horn. So it carries this really strange emotion for me, but I love watching it. And then I love by the end of the scene how, Ben, you're out. You're out, Ben. And he's like having this laugh with himself. It's so, he goes from one to the other so seamlessly.
I teared up a little bit. I'm not going to lie. Like at first I'm like, oh, we're getting good. Like Clark Griswold in Family or Christmas Vacation, you know, when he falls through the, he was just watching all those old home videos. But I teared up, especially when he had that moment, like with his mom, and you also know that what he's really focusing on is like his dad in breaking ground. You know what I mean? Like, so you get to see this peek into what feels like he had good parents. We don't know that, but it would appear that way from a home video. But you look at Ben and his family and what Ben's up to. You know what I mean? So it's almost like it's this weird dynamic where, yeah, he's looking back at more innocent times. And it almost makes me feel like, does he actually long for that? But just that part of him that's into like corruption, you know, is just taken over. His shadow self, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, yes.
I also love his crazy little puppet show at the end, too. I mean, it's just like,
fantastic. It's fantastic.
I love it. All right. Wyndham Earl continues to terrorize Cooper and us, to be quite honest, with threats wrapped up in chess analogies. So Wyndham is still tormenting Coop, right? He's sending him clues, and it's very ominous, obviously, listening to the tape and what he's saying to Cooper. I am not a smart person. I don't care if the whole world knows this. I am not ashamed of it. Don't fucking talk chess to me, please, because I am like, my pawn's gonna run in this flaw. And I'm like, I don't have time to just speak.
I'm almost certain that wasn't the dialogue, but I like it better.
That's what it felt like to me. It was like Charlie Brown's teacher talking. I was like, all right, basically I got the end of it, which was the king must die, which we all know that's obviously his end goal is to get Cooper. But I was just like, I gotta listen to you for like a minute, making all these stop it.
It didn't, I mean, maybe it's because you know more about Wyndham at this point, but, like, it was chilling to me. This is the first time we hear his voice, right?
Yeah, it is.
I think there was something more personal and intimate about him being sent a tape. We've only seen that, like, that is Diane at this point, and yet now we're hearing Wyndham's voice. There was something really sinister about it. I mean, I would have to agree that all of the chess terminology really flies right over my head, so it doesn't fully land for me. But yeah, just something about hearing his voice was creepy.
Well, it's threatening because there's a difference in getting a chess piece with a move in the mail and you kind of know already who it is, right? But that takes it to an intimate level of being threatened when you're speaking to when you're actually voicing it and you hear somebody do it, you know?
It took me a while to watch Queen's Gambit because I just do not care about chess. Thankfully, that show did not require you to know anything about chess.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, another one of those scenes where I was like, oh, this is creepy. This is setting up for the next plot, but I have nothing to say because what is chess?
At Dougie's wedding, hilarity ensues. Dwayne objects to the marriage, then shit talks the entire reception. Denise lets Cooper know she's downstairs. The log lady's having the time of her life. And Denise tells Cooper about her transition, which is heartwarming. And she also lets Cooper know that she's in his corner during this investigation. Okay. I liked all of this. It's stupid, but I liked it, right? Like, I
the
just
wedding
loved the,
part, you mean?
Just whole thing. Not the, okay. Aside from the Denise stuff, it's not stupid, but it felt nice and wholesome, kind of like this is weird, but like after Leland's funeral, when they were all together and like talking about that, it was that whole feeling of like, oh, everybody's together. I mean, the log lady is there, like, and she's like, he has the best weddings. Like, I love the fact that Margaret's there with her log and she's just eating all the food. And I love the fact that you've got these two brothers shit talking, like they hate each other. He's objecting to his wedding. And they're just two old men, you know, like the old men in the balcony on the Muppets.
Yes,
right? Like,
that's exactly who they are.
And
even their laughter is so much
like that. Yes. And even when Cooper comes downstairs and he walks into, you know, where they're having the reception, oh, you almost get this because it's a smile that comes on his face. And you get this moment of like, okay, like he likes this and this is an inviting space for him. Right.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
And so much crazy shit's going on. You know what I mean? And it's just great. And but then we'll also get to the Denise and I love the way that she just explains it to him because it's really actually very simple. Someone coming to terms with who they really are and then being able to feel safe enough to transition into who they really are and then being feeling safe enough to talk about it with Cooper. You see where I'm going with this? Like it is a very heartwarming moment. She's very transparent about it all. And she even says something about some people joked about it, you know, whatever. And she's like, but, you know, and I love how she tells him, oh, she got in touch with her feelings, you know, and like, and that made her really realize this about herself. I loved everything about it. I didn't like, and I know it was a different time, but I do not like the word transvestite.
Yeah. In my notes, I kind of wrote down very 90s language.
Yeah.
We wouldn't use that now, but.
No, it made me cringe, but I was like, okay, put yourself in the time period. Okay. Like this is what it was. But yeah. So that's kind of like that whole scene there was just, it was for me, it was heartwarming and it made me laugh and it was silly and stupid, the brother stuff. And I was into it.
Yeah. Yeah. So sometimes I do on my page, I'll post submit your favorite wholesome moment. And I just want to do a little shout out to my follower, Kelly, for being the first person to send in that moment as being one of the most wholesome.
Aww.
And I completely agree with her. It is top tier, one of the best wholesome moments.
Denise sharing her story.
Yeah. And just them looking over the wedding and just smiling and having a good time together.
Yeah. That's so nice.
That is one of the most wholesome moments in Twin Peaks by far. I just loved it. I loved everything about it.
I don't want to like burst wholesome bubble. I want to get your guys' take though. Like the story doesn't, her story is her own and everyone gets their own story. And I'm nobody to judge your story and whatever, but it does feel a little thin to me. Like I'm pretty sure Denise has known since she was little that she's a woman. And like, I just wish that we could have heard her say something like, putting on the clothes is finally what made it make sense to me, or that's what made me feel the most comfortable stepping into that authentic self. I do like that she says it's not something you plan on. I like that we get that emphasized, that underlined, that seals the deal for me on the story, but there was just something, I just think it could have been better, but as we've seen throughout this episode, I have a lot of commentary about Denise, clearly. So,
no, and it's very good. And you're right about that. There's something that we all should learn and take the time to educate ourselves on is that it's not something that is like one day I put on men's clothing and then I'm like, oh, I'm a man. That's not how it goes.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be portrayed that way.
Right.
Like it is a feeling.
It's a slippery slope when you do something like that. Like
exactly.
It fuels the fire of some people that would be not great to people like Denise.
Exactly. Yeah. I agree with that.
And everyone's transition stories are different. There are people that go from, you know, trans to non-binary. Maybe they decide that they more feel cis. Everyone's different. And so that's why I really loved the Denise quote. This isn't something that you can plan on.
For sure.
Because it is a journey. And it will always be a journey. I mean, sexuality and gender, I feel like they are a journey. There are some people that are born and they know immediately. And then there's some people that are exposed to things and learn, hey, I don't think that you just put on a dress and realize, you know.
That's my issue.
That's a bad part. Yeah.
I agree with everything that you're saying. And like, it's all 100% true, fair, correct, whatever. But that's the thing that really gets me is that, like, it's not really one thing like that, you know?
Yeah, you don't just put on a dress.
Yeah. It just, I don't want to say it's irresponsible, but it is a little bit. I don't know. Again, it's the 90s, so.
Well, and to be fair, you're right, Coral. Like, it's also about what you've been exposed to because it's all about, you know, if you're in a certain type of family where that's not an open dialogue, but it's a feeling that you've had. I mean, perhaps for that person, it might take something like experimenting with the other gender's clothing or makeup, even something like that, for them to be comfortable to say what they've kind of probably already always known or not, but they've
that's
known
the thing. Yeah.
Right. Like everybody's journey is different. And unfortunately there's a lot more of that part of the, of what happens in this world where, girls are pink, boys are blue. I hate that stuff. I hate gender reveal, but I don't like that stuff because it's silly to me. Like, it's silly.
Just because you put on women's clothing. I mean, like, what? I don't know. It's so messy, I think. And it's so, like, it's so difficult to unpack because there's so much there. But it's like, what is women's clothing anyway? I think, again, in the 90s, it's different. It's like, it is a skirt and it is a dress. But, like, I don't know. I clothing doesn't make the gender either. So
absolutely not. No.
Yeah. Anyway, we could probably dissect this for hours, honestly.
But that's a fair point. I will say this also. I do love that Andy is just dancing with Denise.
Yes.
But that's how they end the scene.
So sweet.
Beautiful. I love that.
That was so Andy.
Yes.
And you know what? Like stuff like that and her comment about this isn't something you plan on. Cooper's misnaming an immediate apology and saying the right name. I think the show does do enough to say, like, Denise is a legitimate character. She's not being played for laughs. They may have set it up on a shaky ground, but yeah. I think it's showing us more than telling us that Denise is a woman and it just, that's who she is. So.
Well, Catherine is a monster. Josie reaches out to her for help. Instead of being nice about it, Catherine makes Josie the maid and treats her like shit in return for protection. In a revealing plot twist, Catherine calls her brother Andrew out from the shadows, and they begin to plan to get Eckert. Okay, listen. I'm not even going to start off with the maid stuff. I'm going to give you my main point of the... Or not my main point, but... You mean to tell
me... Your maid point? Please continue.
You mean to tell me... Okay, obviously everybody is shocked shitless because Andrew is alive, right?
For sure. Because
he's in a boating accident. You mean to tell me this man's been living behind this bookcase in the same fucking house as Josie and she ain't run into him one time? He just pops out from that bookcase like a fucking goon.
I love it. Like, such a great reveal. If we're comparing it to the MT Wentz reveal, the Taja Mora reveal, this is the better reveal. This is the best reveal.
Absolutely.
I love the idea of him living behind this bookcase because we have talked about, like, Catherine has so many secret compartments. The Blue Pine Lodge is essentially just a house of secret compartments. But I did mention last week in the spoiler section, I couldn't remember if it comes to pass or not, but I think Andrew Packard's been living up at their family cabin for sure.
That's what I was thinking too.
I think he must have come back with Catherine.
Okay, fair point. I just like to assume that he's been he's just been the Harry Potter of the, you know, Martell residence, right? Or the Packard residence. He's just been back there, you know, like the old man under the stairs, right?
I'm here
for
like
that
too.
Take. I think he was probably at the cabin, but I choose to believe he was Harry Potter.
There we go.
Fair.
Potter! I know what they're doing, but give me a break with the, you're going to be the maid. I take my breakfast at 7 a.m. I want dry ass toast. Not WAP. I want DOT. Dry ass toast. and juice and blah, I don't, just shut up.
Yeah, it's annoying. It puts Catherine on the same level as like all of the male baddies in this show, which I like that part. Like, I like that Catherine isn't all of a sudden not diabolical and evil. And from her perspective, like, Josie did sign an insurance form to collect money upon her death in a mill fire. So I get it. Like, I get the retaliation. But again, this is just sort of part of the stuff that I'm like, it's here. This is Twin Peaks. I love Twin Peaks. But can we just whistle past it?
Yeah. Exactly.
All right. Well, that's all that I had.
Yeah. I mean, I love the way the episode ends. It's another great ending. I genuinely like the fact that Andrew Packard is alive. Even if it's soap opera-y, like, I'm here for it.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to head into the spoiler slash connection section as always. But Coral, just in case some people aren't joining us, where can people find you? And do you have anything fun you want to promote or...
Well, you can find me at Wholesome Peaks on Instagram. That is the only place I am currently. That's pretty much all that's going on. I'm about to go MIA because I'm about to start school. But I'm going to try and be as interactive as possible. You're always welcome to slide into my DMs in a non-creepy way and start a conversation with me because I'm always down to talk to other Twin Peaks fans. But don't be creepy because it's happening. I don't like that.
If you're creepy, we're going to come for you, okay?
Yes. Yeah.
We do not approve.
That's right.
Amazing. Well, to anyone not joining us, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
All right. We are back in the spoiler slash connection section. Coral, what do you got?
Okay. The one thing I have written down is shovel, because it ends on the credits with the shovel. And I was like, this has no connection to the return. But I have to think about how they're shoveling themselves out of the shit in the projector. It's really
stupid.
Oh,
my God.
But...
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I like it. I like it.
And of course, I'm wearing my Fix Your Hearts or Die shirt. As soon as I saw David Duchovny's name on the credits, the opening credits, I was like, need to grab this shirt ASAP.
It's the perfect shirt. Yeah.
Those are really my two big ones.
What about you, Mels?
Okay, I'm going to start off because I did this the other day and I couldn't remember what I was going to talk about the spoiler section, but I remember now. From that episode, but I'm saying, like, I don't want to talk about what I already have written down. With Nadine, what I love is that she goes through what she does in this high school phase, right? And that she does have a new life, but I also love what that feeds into the Nadine that we see in the return. Because when we get to Nadine in the return, it's like, wow. I mean, I know that she is watching Dr. Amp's conspiracy shit, which is weird, but she has her own Silent Drapes store now. She has the courage to let Ed go. Like all of these things, like Nadine had to go, but this confidence that Nadine has when she reemerges from her coma, I guess, from trying to, you know, complete suicide, it carries on with her, you know, into the Nadine that we see in the return, which is my favorite Nadine, you know, like she just seems like a very level-headed, strong woman in the return. And I love that this is where I feel like that confidence came from her.
She has
an
incredible character arc. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. The only other thing that I have is that the name of the bar that James meets Evelyn at is Wally's.
That's right.
That's right. I was like, Wally Brando.
Well, and even James on his bike at the beginning of the episode, I was like, how much better would this be if it was Wally Brando and we were getting like a weird spinoff thing with Wally Brando? And then he heads to hideout, Wally's or Wally's hideout, whatever it is. But it's so perfect. I love it.
I love it.
That reminds me of something from the last episode. So I'm not sure if it's appropriate in this episode here.
Go for it.
Andy says something like, which one of us is going to throw the baseball? And I just laughed at the TV and I said, neither of you.
Yeah. True.
Oh, how funny is it that we actually see Dougie trying to throw a baseball in the return.
That is one of my favorite scenes.
Dougie's big day out on the field. One of my favorites.
Absolutely.
Big sports moment. The only sports I've ever really cared about.
There we go.
Okay, sorry. What else you got, Mels?
No, I mean, honestly, that's kind of it. I'm going to be honest. Like, I got really confused and I had to look up what comes up with Andrew Packard and Andrew Eckhart, because I was like, wait a minute.
I think it's when I was, Thomas Eckhart. Is it?
Wait a minute. I called him Andrew the whole episode.
Well, Andrew Packard. It's Andrew Packard, but I think it's Thomas Eckhart.
Oh, no. I wrote Andrew. I was calling Eckhart Andrew.
Uh-oh. But I think you really only mentioned him once. I mean, whatever. People know what you're talking about. I don't think it's
okay.
Real.
Okay. Okay. But I had to look that up because I was really... I don't know.
Thomas Eckhart is... When we meet him, he's standing in front of a fireplace and you can see the flames in his sunglasses. It's one of my favorite memes ever of all time, or my favorite gifts, whatever.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's Thomas Eckhart. Fantastic. Fantastic.
That's all I had, though. Just that I had to. I didn't want to talk about. You know, that I had to look it up and be like, because I got super confused where I was like, hold a minute.
That storyline gets, I mean, it's already super convoluted, but it gets even more convoluted now that Andrew is back. And I mean, I love the deviousness of it, but.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. So I also had that stuff about Wally Brando and Hideout Wally's. I wanted to get your guys' take. So this line about if you confront the Black Lodge with imperfect courage, it will utterly annihilate your soul. I think this definitely happened to both Leland and Wyndham Earl, but not Laura, right? Like Laura faced this with perfect courage. She found her peace, I think.
I think so. Yeah.
She went into everything. She allowed herself to die. That was very courageous. And then I wonder, did Dale face it with perfect courage?
This is my next question. Yeah.
Is Richard the result of him?
Exactly. Yes. Like, he never came out. He was there briefly, but then very soon he's all of a sudden Richard.
Right.
And so he didn't, annihilate your soul. I don't think that I don't know. It's different because, like, both Leland and Laura died. We don't really know the state of Wyndham. Like, I think it was just the annihilate your soul part. And that might have also happened to Coop, I think. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe something we can talk about more towards the end of season two and then in the return. But I do think that this was some major foreshadowing for the imperfect way that Coop was going to get into that Black Lodge.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, and then finally, this is just more of a thing that I'm starting to realize as I watch season two again. So season three, I don't know if you guys would agree, it feels like there's a lot of empty space in the return, but like not empty in a bad way. Like it's just a much quieter season. There's not as much happening. Whereas when you contrast it with season two, there's so much going on. Like there's no space for silence in this season. And maybe I'm just really thinking about it from the lens of this episode, but all of the scenes feel disconnected yet connected in the same way that they do in The Return. Like, I don't necessarily think that every episode of The Return has the best narrative consistency, but everything just sort of works together. It's like having an eclectic style where every piece of furniture you have isn't from a set, but it all works together. Mm-hmm. And I think in The Return, it's just quieter than it is here. Do you guys see what I'm saying?
I do.
Yeah.
And I agree. Yeah. Like, Because I have a friend at work. I mean, he loves Twin Peaks and he loves season three, but or The Return. But I love how he kind of explained it to me, like so much was happening without a lot happening. You know what I mean? Like the story tells itself without having to be overcomplicated.
Yes.
With a lot of extra things. And I love that he felt that way about it, because that's how, I think that's how we all feel, right? Where it's like the sea, and because I haven't been back to The Return really until we started talking backwards, and then I did watch it with my mom, but like, I didn't realize the big difference, you know, until I have revisited seasons one and two, and then getting into The Return where I'm like, so much is happening, but nothing at the same time.
Yeah. And,
it's a refreshing thing because unfortunately season two is now going to start to get a bit chaotic, right?
Yes.
And too much. And I much prefer that simple, but it's not simple feel of the return. So
I agree. Yeah. You know, with the return, I can watch someone sweep a floor for a minute.
Yes.
And I have more interest in that than I do in listening to Josie or Catherine ever speak.
Yes.
That's my eyes glaze over for them, but someone's sweeping a floor and I'm like, oh, really?
Yes. Exactly.
You missed the spot.
That perfectly encapsulates what I was going for. There's just like, there's so much noise in season two, and it's fine. Like, again, I still love it with my whole heart. There's nothing that I want removed from Twin Peaks, to be perfectly honest. Like, I want it just as it is. But there's something really nice about the silence and the space that you get in season three and the way that the story tells itself in that way. And yet, I'm starting to see this connection between the disconnect of the scenes, but the way that they still sort of fit together, but just in like same, but different ways. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Something I'm going to track as we move through this area of season two. But
well, if that's all for this week, I'm headed down to the double R for a malted.
And I'm off to somewhere that's not so much a place, but a feeling.
Mm-hmm. You do that, James. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Damn Fine TV podcast.
If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform.
Come hang out with us on Instagram and Twitter at Damn Fine TV.
You can find me on Instagram at Damn Fine Witch and Mel's at Superficial Mel's.
And if you're watching TV,
make sure it's Damn Fine TV.
Damn Fine
TV.
I don't think that you can get too much Twin Peaks.
Oh, yep. Man, I might tear up. For real. Like, that's not a joke.
You're so moved by your own words.
No, God. People are going to be like, she is so egotistical. No, to make it clear, I was moved by Coles.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Moved by my own words.
Whatever. I'm moved by your words. You can be moved by your own words.
Y'all know me too well around here. Okay.